Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey listeners, be sure to check out slipdisc.com for the latest inside information on classical music now. American composer, singer-songwriter, and sonic storyteller Gabriel Kahane uses a vast tapestry of musical styles to craft captivating works that illustrate and elevate the human experience. While his style varies from intimate solo pieces to grand orchestral compositions, his message remains constant.
One of the things that has become most central to my reason for being in the world is to perform music as a way of bringing people together, that we're all participating in this beautiful thing of sharing space together.
You're listening to Speaking Soundly, a backstage pass to today's biggest stars of the music world. I'm your host, David Krause, principal trumpet of the Metropolitan Opera. During each episode, you'll hear me speak with inspiring performers about their creative process and the personal journey that led them to the stage. I think we're there. I'm recording. Volume level's good. Okay, I'm all set.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for your patience. Also, I feel like we've been emailing forever just trying to set this up, so thank you.
Oh, no worries.
See, I knew you'd be cool. Like, you know how you can have a sense of someone just in their emails?
What does that mean for you?
You know, like when you're emailing with someone who's faceless and then I'll finally see them like at a music festival or whatever it is. And I'll say like, oh yeah, you look like your emails. I don't know. Just like your emails were plain spoken and polite and patient.
Mm. You're saying that Ricardo Muti and I don't email in the same way.
I don't think he emails. I mean,
probably not.
Have you ever gotten an email from Muti?
Never been in the same room with him.
I got respectfully reprimanded by him once in a rehearsal for playing too loud.
Oi, what was that like?
This isn't about me. This time is about you.
Yeah, but see, I'm the child of a psychologist, so I'm always trying to turn the tables on my interviewer.
She's amazing, but that was a weird experience. And the last thing before we get started is that I just got back from...
What do you mean? We already started.
No, this is not the start. It has to be very official.
Oh, are you sure? I don't want to keep you from doing your official intro, but I just think that some of that Muti content could be gold. I'm just
no,
going to put it out there.
None of that is getting out.
All right, fine.
So, like discerning your personality through your emails, I really love your music.
Oh, thank you. Can you get me a commission at the Met?
Well, I could try. I could try. I would imagine any time your commission for anything, it's actually difficult to describe your style, what you do, because when I tell people that aren't familiar with your music, when I describe your music to them, I find myself having to use a lot of words.
He's a singer, songwriter. He also writes chamber music and piano concertos. And some of his songs remind me of Paul Simon and some like Joni Mitchell, but others sound like Schubert and Alban Berg. And it's folksy, but it's also kind of pop and can be avant-garde and atonal. But that stuff is also really cool and funny and sad at the same time. That's a lot of words. Is there a better way to sum up what you do? If you had a business card, what would be on it?
Well, first, thank you. And secondly, that's a great question. A friend of mine, a wonderful playwright, she was asked in an interview once, she said, what is this play about? And she said, well, if I could tell you what it was about, I wouldn't have needed to write the play. What I will say is I'm a storyteller. I think that that's really central to what interests me. And the other thing that interests me that sits both outside of and within music is using music to create community. It's one of the things that has become most central to my reason for being in the world is to perform music as a way of bringing people together, which sounds kind of trite and hallmarky, but I think particularly in this moment that is so rife with political and cultural division, having spaces where the focus is to generate a sense of community is really, really important to me, that we're all participating in this beautiful thing of sharing space together.
As beautiful as your songs are, a few times they've left me actually feeling pretty awful about myself, and I want to tell you why, because I think this is a me thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, okay. So you write specific songs with specific lyrics. Take, for example, your song Sit Shiva, where you depict a pandemic era online Zoom Shiva service, funeral service. And you paint a very vivid picture of sadness, humor, and the absurdity of being in a Zoom room with your entire extended family. It's a great song. And only after hearing it did it remind me of the Shivas that I sat through during the pandemic. And here's the part about making me feel awful, because your memories are so much more vivid and colorful than mine. Like, it took me listening to your song to recall my own experience. So is it the process of putting memories to music that heightens everything for you? Or am I just like an empty human being that can't remember meaningful moments?
Well, first of all, I want to suggest that you're putting this on yourself in a kind of glass half full way. Like, I'm going to tell you the story that you just told me, but I'm going to tell it to you through my own lens.
Okay.
Which is, hey, Gabe, I heard your song Sit Shiva, and it brought me back to the Shivas that I had experienced during the pandemic. And it opened up all these memories that I hadn't realized were there and sort of like dormant. So thank you for writing that song. On the one hand, I'm making a joke, but on the other hand—
No, you're right. You're right.
I think actually what you're saying in a way is the highest compliment, that because that's what we want songs to do, especially, you know, for a song that is in a way highly specific. It's been interesting that has been the song that I've often closed sets with that over the last couple of years. And I've had more conversations with audience members about that song than anyone else. And not just with Jewish people. I think it's also just a song about how we've all dealt with loss during this period when we often couldn't say goodbye in ways that were as dignified or, you know, commensurate with the magnitude of the end of life. The other thing that I should say, just in terms of you feeling bad about yourself, is I don't have an amazing memory. I forget all kinds of shit all the time. If I hadn't recorded all of those reactions in the 24 hours after that experience had happened, I'm sure I wouldn't have remembered a lot of it. Or I mean, some of it I might have, because it was really funny. And that's something that really speaks to me in art generally, is that knife's edge of humor and tragedy, which I think Anton Chekhov, the great Russian playwright, and Shakespeare are sort of two of the greatest exponents of that knife's edge of recognizing that where we are at our most vulnerable and decimated is often also where the greatest humor emerges. And it's funny, speaking to a guy who works in the opera, it's something that frustrates me about opera as a form, that I think opera should be funnier than it is. I think there's so much room when we're living in these kind of heightened states, we're singing a passionate aria about the laundry, that like we should be able to laugh and cry within, you know, a few seconds. So yeah, if and when I do write an opera, my first instinct would be to, you know, walk into the producer's office or whomever it is, and when they say, what do you want to do? I'd say, I want to write a funny opera.
You know what? That would be awesome also, because I think you're hilarious. You musically frame outrageous things earnestly.
Mm.
And that is a combination that really makes me laugh. For example, your Craigslist leader, the songs that you took from real life Craigslist listings that you set to music, is an endless resource of humor for me. And I can go to that anytime I need a lift. And when I am depressed and I need to get out of it, all I have to do is hum the beginning of your song, of Mitt Romney's tweet about how hot dog is his favorite meat.
That makes me happy.
It's so funny. Is humor just easy for you to access and put into the most serious situations?
I mean, sometimes yes, sometimes no, but actually, in a weird way, I think it has to do with empathy. I think it has to do with the fact that in that song, for example, I'm not making fun of Mitt Romney. I'm taking him at his word, and I'm taking him at his word that he feels misunderstood by a world that wants him to like hamburgers and steak more than hot dogs. And he's like, you guys, I really like hot dogs. And the kind of humor that I respond to the most is a kind of humor that is ultimately empathetic, that's not laughing at people, but that joins someone and holds their hand on the journey that they're on. And it's like, Mitt, I feel you, bro. I feel that the world wants something from you that they're not able to give. You feel unseen by the world, and I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you some music to feel a little more seen.
It's so great. You know, it makes total sense that you have this talent for navigating emotions, words, and music, because you're the son of a psychologist and a concert pianist. So it seemed like you were predestined to wrestle with words and music. Did you feel that growing up?
I didn't. And, it was interestingly, when I was doing press for Book of Travelers, that was the moment where I realized how much my mom, as much as my dad, Jeffrey Kahane, who's a wonderful pianist and conductor, I realized, you know, after years and years of people saying, what's it like to grow up with a musical father? And I think my mom always feeling like a little bit shut out of the sort of privacy of that relationship, being able to say, you know, full-throatedly how much I think my mom's influence came to bear. You know, my mom has this kind of preternatural ability to get people to be incredibly vulnerable with her very quickly, like in social situations where people just kind of will start dumping it all out. And I think I inherited a small fraction of that. I often have initial conversations with people I've just met where they'll say, I can't believe I'm telling you all of this. So no, it wasn't a foregone conclusion, but as I look back at my childhood, then it's like, well, of course this is what I do.
How early did music come into your life? I would imagine it was ever present in your household, but was there a point where you made a conscious decision for yourself? Okay, I want to do music.
Yeah, it was pretty late actually. I mean, I did kind of half-heartedly did Suzuki, I think starting when I was 5 on violin, and then switched to piano when I was 7. And I was one of these kids who, I was a different drummer in so many respects, and among them that I didn't really learn to read music properly. I had a pretty good ear, and so I would just get the teacher to play things until I had them memorized. And then when I was about 12, I stopped playing the piano and found my parents' guitars, and that began to interest me as I was discovering my own sense around pop music. But also as a kid, I was a Jewish kid singing in a Catholic boys choir in Rochester, New York. So there was music there. And then as a teenager, I kind of got back into the piano and into improvising. My dad gave me some jazz records, some Bill Evans records, Coltrane records. But at the same time, I was also getting really into theater, and not musical theater, but like straight plays. I went to a very unusual kind of magnet program within a public high school where we were doing plays by Carol Churchill and Tony Kushner and Oscar Wilde and Chekhov. So it's like very, very not your standard high school fare. And then I spent a year at NEC as a jazz pianist. Then I went to Brown for my last 3 years of college and really kind of threw myself back into doing theater. And then when I moved to New York, I rented a U-Haul the day after I graduated. And actually, my first apartment I shared with Elisa Weilerstein, who was a childhood friend and a friend of mine from college. We lived on 109th Street, just west of Broadway, not really knowing what I was going to do. I still thought maybe I would act because I had returned to doing some acting at Brown. Then I moved to New York and I started writing songs. And all of this is to say that, like, I don't know at what point. It was a little bit like a lobster being dropped into a pot of cold water that is gradually boils. Like, I never really decided. It was like suddenly I was a songwriter and then people asked me to write concert music, and then I found my way back into the theater. So it was a very gradual and somewhat unorthodox process.
You're one of those rare people. I wish I did this more myself. Like, you think before you talk, as opposed to speaking first and regretting it later. And I would imagine this is just part of your personality, because I read that as a child, you were a chess whiz kid. Is that true?
Yes.
So having this proclivity for something like chess means that you have the ability to put your thoughts in a row before you're making a move, similar to having a discussion with you. Can seeing steps ahead and being very calculated, can that get in the way of creativity?
That's such a insightful question that no one has ever asked me. I mean, I think part of what you're getting at is future tripping, right? The danger that comes with looking too far ahead into the future, being able to think critically several steps ahead, and that being paralyzing. I would say that it's only a hindrance if you don't know how to temporarily turn off those faculties. And when I teach, one of the things that I talk about most often with students who are struggling to get notes on the page or words on the page, I try to emphasize that when we're being generative, you have to give yourself permission to make terrible decisions. I forget the poet who said this, but you can't revise nothing. You have to have something on the page in order to be able to revise. And I think that for young artists, this goes back to a thought that I may not have finished fully earlier about instant gratification, that I think we sort of expect things to come out whole. And all you have to do is go back and look at Beethoven or Schubert sketches to understand that none of that stuff came easily. It's a really astute question about how do you not get in your own way? And I think that what this really points toward is that in any creative endeavor, there's the moment where you just have to sketch and get ideas on the page. Now that I have all these ideas on the page, before I start, writing from the first bar, and I don't always write from the first bar, there might be another phase, which is to use the chess brain, which is, what are all the different ways that I can manipulate this idea or that idea? So it's really just a question of knowing which parts of your brain you need to use when, and being aware of when the analytical mind can be an obstacle.
Yeah. You wrote a song about coffee. I'm a huge coffee guy, and I make espresso every morning. It's the one factor in my life that I can really control, and it provides me with a lot of joy. But when I heard your song about making coffee, it seemed so much more alive and heightened and colorful than the experience that I have every morning. But having spoken to you now, I'll say thank you for writing that to then show me how beautiful my own experience is. So see, I've grown.
Well, that's great. And I would just say, while that song began as a sort of almost jokey, overly serious meditation on the act of making coffee, what it gets to is like, how do we continue to do those daily rituals when the world around us feels like it's falling apart? And so to revisit one more time your question about how would I distill what I do to someone in a sentence or two, I think it is also very much about trying to have the humility to celebrate the mundane in life in its relationship to things that feel that they have more weight or more significance, and to make space for both of those things, and that we can't beat ourselves up for the fact you and I are both people of a certain degree of privilege. You play in the Met Opera Orchestra and I get to make a living writing songs. As people who live in the global North, we have astronomical economic privilege relative to the vast majority of people who are alive right now. And on the one hand, that could be a source of guilt and a source of paralysis. But I think that there's another way of sort of moving through that, moving through the distance from all of the pain and grief in the world, and to be able to both be aware of it and have our choices move toward greater justice, but also just accept the fact that it's like, there's also this ritual that we do with coffee that helps us feel better about our day.
I don't know if you could fit all that on a business card, but that's a pretty good summation of what you do. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Speaking Soundly. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends about it. Spread the word. Be sure to follow, rate us, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. To keep up on future episodes, follow us on Instagram at SpeakingSNDLY and visit our website, artfulnarrativesmedia.com. Tune in next week as we hear another inspiring artist speaking soundly.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flimsy stand slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ArmOdillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.